Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The journalist James Foley once said, quote, "For some reason, I have physical courage, but there's also moral courage," end quote. He was talking about the moral courage shown by civilians in a war zone and the moral courage of journalists trying to tell those stories in the midst of a moral catastrophe, a moral abomination, really, of the grinding wars in Iraq, Libya, and Syria. Well, Foley was a freelancer, and he covered the Middle East for outlets such as the Boston-based Global Post. He was kidnapped in Libya in 2011 and then released. In 2012, he was kidnapped again in Syria. And on August 19, 2014, a video showed the world the abject brutality of the so-called Islamic State. They had executed James Foley. Now, those are the broad strokes of a story many of us think we know. But think about what Foley said, that quotation that I read just a moment ago, about moral courage. That's the story told in the new documentary, Jim, the James Foley story, and it debuts Saturday on HBO. Brian Oakes directed the film, and he joins us now from New York. Brian, welcome to Radio Boston.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's very much a pleasure and an honor to have you. Also with us on the line is James Foley's brother, Michael. Michael, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Brian and Michael, I watched the documentary in its entirety, and you're going to have to forgive me in advance if I can't make it through this conversation without getting a bit choked up, because it's an amazing piece of work and an incredible testament to James Foley. But Brian, let me just start with the basics with you. You knew Jim. Tell us how you knew Jim and why you wanted to make this film.
Sure. Well, you know, Jim and I go way back, me and the Foley family as well. I've known Jim since we were 7 years old. We first graders together. We grew up in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. Not so far away. So, we were close friends in elementary school and high school and friends well into our adult lives. My original motivation for making the film was, you know, about 3 months after Jim was killed, I started debating whether or not this would be something I wanted to pursue. And, you know, the image of James Foley around the globe was something that I kind of started to be very uncomfortable with. It was a image that had been politicized and propagated in ways that, you know, I was very protective of my friend, and that was I felt like I wanted to tell the world who this man was, because and change that image and kind of recontextualize what that image meant.
Well, and Michael, when Brian told you and your whole family, all of whom appear in the film, you know, talking about James, when he told you it's time to make this movie, what did you and the rest of the Foley family think?
Well, it took a little while to process it. We had been inundated with media and requests for documentaries and some very aggressive. And similar to Brian's comment there, you know, I was very displeased with how Jim's image and, you know, how he was portrayed throughout the media. But I remember when Brian called in November, a couple months after Jim died, and Brian had a plan, I think, to put together a very balanced and fair and thorough film. You know, he wasn't going to do it unless he could come up with the necessary funds and resources to really put a quality product out there. And that combined with knowing him, you know, growing up and having, you know, trust in him, I think really it came together as an easy decision for the family to support that.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little bit more in just a minute or two, Michael, about, some of the thoughts that your family shares in the documentary. But Brian, the first half of the film, which again airs on HBO on Saturday, it's this delicate weaving of, you know, the story of James Foley, if it's okay if I may call him Jim, of Jim's life, you know, growing up, and the kinds of things that he loved to do and what he was searching for, with, of course, the footage that he himself probably shot during his work in Iraq and Libya, and then later on in Syria. And you also talk to journalists, other freelancers that he worked with in those conflict zones. So what was it like, you know, reaching out to them and getting them to talk with you?
Well, I mean, you know, I think what eventually happened with the film, the thesis ended up being, you know, kind of why Jim and his fellow colleagues, why they decide to return and go back to these dangerous war environments.
I mean, that's a constant question, right? Why? Everyone asks that at some point in time in the
of
film.
Of course. Yeah. And, you know, I asked that myself, and a lot of people ask that, sometimes more accusatory than anything else. So I really wanted to explore that, because I think it's important. I think it's an important part of Jim's decision and to tell why conflict journalism is so important to us right now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there were four of Jim's colleagues, Claire Gillis, and Nicole Tung, Manu Bravo, and Zach Bailey, who were in the film. Claire and Manu are actually two colleagues that he was kidnapped with in Libya the first time. So they kind of, for me, were surrogates for Jim, and they kind of describe, you know, why what they do they feel is important, and in turn kind of answer that question.
Yeah. You know, we have a little bit of tape here from Jim, the James Foley story. And since you mentioned Claire Gillis, it seemed a good time to play this, because it's just a short clip where she's describing sort of what life is like for freelancers, specifically working in these conflict zones, and some of the experiences that she and Jim and Nicole and others all shared together.
Freelancers decide to work together just on the basis of this initial quick read chemistry. I saw this new guy who I hadn't met before. He looked friendly enough, so I said, "Hey, what's up?" He said, "Oh, not much. Going to the front line." And he'd heard a lot about Libya and the fact that it was very cheap to work. Rebels and protesters were eager to show us their side of the story. You know, they were driving us all over for free. They were translating for us for free.
That's a clip from Jim, the James Foley story, directed by Brian Oakes, who joins us today from New York. And we're also joined by Michael Foley, James Foley's brother. Michael, can I just ask you, as I was watching the first half of the film, you know, as Brian and I were just talking about this question of why Jim and other freelancers, we have to underscore that they were freelancers because they were just working under different conditions than journalists who were full-time with media organizations, why they put themselves into such dangerous zones, especially after, you know, Jim was kidnapped and released in Libya. And there's one point in time where I think we just hear a little bit from Jim himself, from a speech that he gave, and he says, "I'm just trying to get to the truth." I mean, I wonder, you must have had conversations with him where you asked him why, and what did he tell you?
Oh, multiple conversations. I mean, initially, I couldn't accept the answers, but after he, you know, lived through so many of the experiences, including his 45 days of captivity in Libya, you know, and multiple trips to Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria, you could tell, number one, that it was his passion, but number two, I became much closer to the stories, to the suffering. I mean, I have to admit, you know, years back before Jim started this work, I fell into the category maybe kind of the general populace does, and really had no idea, you know, about the suffering and the pain going on in some of these countries. And, you know, as dangerous as it was, I think the family became very supportive. You know, just stood behind him. Mm-hmm. I still, we'd argue over how many trips he'd have to go certain places, but, you know, ultimately became pretty supportive of his role, of his profession. And, you know, I think it is really important. It's a really important part of our culture.
Yeah.
It needs to stay.
So we get a sense of the danger in the film, Brian, because, as I mentioned a little earlier, there's a lot of frontline footage that you use, especially in the first half. I mean, there, you know, the scene I'm about to recall, where I think it's Nicole who's describing in Syria, a fighter jet flying over a neighborhood that they were doing some reporting in and basically dropping two bombs on two buildings literally across the street from where they were. One of the buildings, there was a family, an entire family that just gets wiped out. You use a lot of that footage, and some of it is way more graphic than we ever see on television. It's the stuff that doesn't make it onto the public, onto mainstream television. How did you decide what to use and what not to use in order to give us a truer sense of what it was actually like for Jim and others?
Well, I mean, you know, all of that particular story was Jim's footage, and you know, another kind of reason why I wanted to make this film was, you know, Jim was covering these stories 3 years ago, and you know, when probably a lot of us weren't really paying attention to what was going on in Syria. Now we're seeing the largest refugee crisis since World War II. So, you know, these stories that Jim was telling 3 years ago are so relevant right now. And so, you know, as far as deciding to choose what footage to show, it was just based upon, you know, what Jim was filming. And I think what's really important is, as graphic as it is, it's very important, I think, that I wanted to put into context where these journalists are and what is actually going on over there. I think you can choose not to watch this, but you can't be blind to it.
Mm-hmm.
And as horrific as this some of this footage is, it's happening. And Jim wanted us to know this.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult choice, but at the same time, like, this is, to me, it needed to be an honest film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to understand exactly what is going on over there, as horrific as it is.
Well, Michael, if I may ask you, in the second half of the documentary, we hear from several people who basically shared a cell with Jim during his kidnapping and captivity in Syria, and we hear them describe the conditions, the torture that they faced. We also hear them describe, you know, sort of spiritually how they came together. It's a very intimate and emotional portion of the film. And what was it like for you and the family to hear these things from people who spent, you know, that last time with Jim?
Well, it was very emotional. But just before I answer that, I want to relate something to what Brian said. I think, not to put words in his mouth, but going into this, he didn't have a detailed plan or script, right? And I'm not a filmmaker, but I pretty much know that to be true. He had a top level idea, but he allowed the stories of the people, the ex-hostages, ex-colleagues, family and friends, to paint an honest and fair and powerful picture. And we found out together through the process. I went to Europe with Brian and met the former hostages, and you know, we learned that the stories together, and it was a very sad, very emotional, but also uplifting moment for me to hear, you know, what Jim's last 2 years in captivity were like. And when you're really, you know, you're really stripped and you are who you are, and really to understand how he lived his final days, I think is really a powerful storyline there that will the audience should, you know, grab onto.
Well, that's why that you know, that quotation that you have of Jim and himself saying about physical and moral courage has really stayed with me, even after watching the film. I mean, Michael, if I also may ask, I mean, Brian does put in the film hints and conversations about your family's long attempts to get Jim back, and the help or lack of help from the U.S. government. I mean, there are scenes where, Phil Balboni at Global Post says he wishes that negotiations had started, or that you had started raising money earlier. I mean, these are still parts of the political situation that are as of yet unresolved.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, there are many important questions that the film raises that, you know, we all need to think about. You know, our family's been really involved in trying to tackle some of these issues in Washington and elsewhere. But there was, you know, some many unfortunate things that happened, you know, throughout this process. And the government was not all that supportive. They certainly were not effective. And that's something that needs to be addressed so that future U.S. citizens can be, you know, protected and this can be avoided in the future.
I mean, Brian, I heard you on NPR this morning saying that you didn't want this to be a political film. But I wonder if I feel like that's an impossibility because, I mean, even Jim himself went into the middle of a war zone that's a political catastrophe as well. And part of what happened to him has to do with politics. So, I mean, how do you balance that?
All right. Well, I mean, you're right. It was purposely an apolitical film, but I don't deny that there are many, many political themes that the story brings up, which is great. That I like that, and I'm glad that those conversations are, you know, need to happen. When I say it's not a political film, what I mean is, you know, the point of view of the narrative of this particular story is not political, and I wanted to avoid that because policies change, ISIS will change, political landscapes are going to change, but the story of Jim is not going to. And if I'm going to go into all of those topics and broach all that, this becomes a 10-hour series documentary, and so and it deviates from Jim, and that's what I didn't want to do. So, you know, I think there's a lot, you know, but at the same time, the political messages do surface, which is fine, and I'm glad, and I hope that people, when they watch it, they can, you know, go to a bar and have a drink with their friends and discuss those political issues amongst themselves.
Well, the new documentary is called Jim, the James Foley Story. It debuts on February 6th on HBO. Brian Oakes directed the film. Brian, thank you so very much for joining us today, and thank you for the documentary. It's an incredible piece of work.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great.
And Michael Foley, he's James Foley's brother, speaking to us today from North Andover, Massachusetts. Michael, thank you so very much for joining us as well.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for covering this story.
We've got more information about the documentary. It's at our website, radioboston.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Mm-hmm.